Aloha, and welcome to the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Servco Pacific. In each episode, we talk with some of Hawaii's most influential business, nonprofit, and cultural leaders, and ask them about the important issues facing Hawaii and its people. We'll also learn a bit about each fascinating guest and have some fun along the way. Now, the host of the Hawaii Business Podcast, Anyang Nakata.
Today's episode is presented by Lexus Hawaii. The benefit of owning a Lexus goes beyond the joy of driving a luxury vehicle. Experience amazing with Lexus Perks. Enjoy unparalleled experiences and special offers at perks.surfcolexus.com. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Hawaii Business Podcast. Today, we have Christopher Benjamin, better known as Chris Benjamin, president and CEO of Alexander & Baldwin, Inc. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Anya.
This is sincere. Nice Aloha shirt, nice purple.
Thank you very much. This is a shirt, shout out to Josh Feldman and Tori Richards. This is a shirt that we designed in collaboration with them to commemorate our 150th anniversary in 2020.
I see it now.
So I see the building. Elements of the building, the sugar cane, the logo.
Oh, I like it. It's subtle though.
Yeah, the shirt came out great. The anniversary year didn't come out so great. It was 2020 and the celebration.
Why? What
was
happened
cut
that
short.
Year? I'm just joking. Yeah.
But anyway, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so much to talk about, and I'd like to kick it off with Manoa Marketplace.
Okay.
Manoa Marketplace has a special place in our family's heart because our one child, she took up an instrument. She begged and begged and begged and begged to take piano. And one of the great tenets that you have at Manoa Marketplace is the Manoa School of Music and Arts. And although she doesn't play piano anymore because she plays a cello now, we have such fond memories of every Sunday driving to Manoa Marketplace, getting something at Brugge, dropping her off at piano. I would go to CVS Long's. I should just call it Longs because it is no matter what. Doing the Sunday, you know, sale shopping of things that I don't need, but it's on sale, so I get it. And then going to the farmer's market. And so it just really has a nice memory for us. And in 2016, actually, that's the year you actually became CEO.
That's right.
A&B purchased this wonderful shopping center, which I understand is the second largest grocery anchored center in urban Honolulu. And also, it sounds like, you know, very strong performing in financials and tenants and retaining tenants. And so I wanted to start our conversation with that and tell me about how the purchase of Manoa Marketplace actually fits in to the A&B's larger strategy of investing in Hawaii and strategically moving your investments from the mainland to Hawaii.
Well, that's a great question, and it really is kind of a microcosm of our whole story. So I'm really glad you asked me that. I wasn't expecting it, but I'm glad you asked, because first of all, our strategy became about almost 10 years ago to focus on Hawaii real estate. And the reason for that is this is where we're based. It's where we've been based 150 years. And while we had most of our assets actually spread across the continental U.S.
Which I didn't know. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Just 10 years ago, almost two-thirds of our commercial real estate was spread everywhere from the West Coast to Savannah, Georgia. We felt that as a local player, knows the market well, has a lot of relationships, we were best served and our shareholders were best served if we focused in that local market. And so we began selling off our mainland assets and reinvesting in Hawaii. And that's all complete, and now we're 100% Hawaii. But the Manoa Marketplace story is interesting because it's, first of all, it's a great center, and it's a classic community-centered, grocery-anchored asset that is the kind of asset we like to own, because it allows us to provide a great venue for the community. But it was an interesting acquisition because the asset was owned in two separate parts. A local family that had owned it.
Correct, right?
You know them.
Yes.
The Wong family had owned it for generations, for a very long time. They owned the land, but then there was a California-based company that owned the shopping center itself. They leased the land to them.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I see.
And so it was a bifurcated ownership structure. And we acquired both. But the way we did it was over a relatively long period of time, we built a relationship with the family that owned it, built their trust, gained their trust, And they warmed up to the idea. They were not initially, you know, looking to sell the property, but they warmed up to the idea of selling it to A&B because we are a local player.
Mm-hmm.
And once we negotiated with them to buy the land, that then put us in a position to negotiate with the California owner of the shopping center, and we bought. And so we closed simultaneously, and we consolidated ownership of that asset. So now we own it fee simple. That allows us now to make improvements in the center.
And which is much needed. No disrespect to the family or the mainland company, but I remember there was a large group of parking stalls that you literally couldn't park in because the tree roots were coming up.
Right. And this is also a good microcosm of kind of what we go through in owning centers like this, because we wanted to make improvements. And by the way, none of that had anything to do with the local ownership, because they simply owned the land.
I understand that now, right?
They had nothing to do with the condition of the shopping center. And it was the mainland entity that, you know, maintained the center itself. And so what we were able to do was go in and make those investments. And we're currently investing over $10 million in an upgrade, a refresh of the center. But what you're referring to with the parking lot, that was several years ago when we renovated or fixed the parking lot. But even that became controversial because some of those tree roots led us to conclude that we probably needed to take down a lot of those trees. That led to some community backlash, and that sent us back to the drawing board to figure out how we could save the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was we took out some parking spaces. We created larger planter boxes around them. So we lost some parking, mm-hmm. but we were able to preserve the trees.
I love that. I love that.
So it was a win-win in the end. But it did demonstrate, some of the push and pull of, you know, balancing these various objectives of having a center that is safe, that operates well, that has plenty of parking, but also has nice shade trees and retains its character. And a lot of what we do in the community is trying to balance those things. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all.
And I think your word about the word using microcosm is perfect, because what you described about the two steps back to go five steps forward, you know, trying to listen to the community, especially Manoa being such a pillar of the urban Honolulu and having such great memories for a lot of people, right? And schools and homes and Paradise Park and all those kinds of things. And I'm sure this is what one of the ways that you earn the Wong family's trust is explaining to them what you had in store, which is about investing in Hawaii and its people and serving that community and the urban Honolulu at large. And so I think microcosm is a perfect word.
And if I could just say, yeah. You don't always get it right.
Oh, of course
and
not.
And frankly, in that process, we thought we had done it right because we had engaged with the Outdoor Circle. We had talked to them about our plans and we thought we had them on board. Well, there are a couple different groups within the Outdoor Circle, and we learned that we didn't have everybody on board. But when we realized that, we stepped back and we listened to the community and we developed a new plan. And one of the things that's important is engaging with those folks who maybe aren't happy with what you're doing, figuring out how you can do it better. You're never going to please everybody, but if you take the time and you listen and you engage, I think you can come up with the right solution and hopefully a win-win.
I like that you shared that. And frankly, I believe that if you're doing good things, the fact that not everybody likes you means that you're doing good things, right? Don't play it safe. And let's keep it real. A&B is part of the territorial Big Five. Not everybody thinks you're great. Some people have probably some very strong emotions, right? And you don't always get it right, but at least you're trying.
Yeah,
and you're running towards the people who are quote unquote detractors and saying, okay, why?
That's exactly right. That is both the blessing and the curse of being a 150-year-old company.
Right.
We have a reputation. People know we're going to be around. People, you know, trust us in a lot of ways. But also there's baggage that
mm-hmm.
comes with that 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
And some people
don't want to let go.
Right. Some people don't want to let go. And I don't blame them. All we ask for is the opportunity to engage, to have you understand where we're coming from, and to try to work through solutions. That's what we've done. I have sat down personally with East Maui Taro Farmers, with advocates of Poly Lanes, with the folks around this tree issue in Manoa. These are important discussions to have, and there's no way that we could be true to our slogan, which is being partners for Hawaii, if we weren't willing to engage in those discussions. Because that's what makes it, that's what makes it genuine. And they're sometimes very difficult discussions, but I think they lead to better outcomes.
Yeah, and I absolutely love that. And, you know, there's many goals of this talk story, this podcast, but that is my primary overarching goal, is to have more dialogue that is not always in disagreement, not always in agreement. I want more disagreement, respectful disagreement.
Exactly.
So I'm really excited about Manoa Marketplace. Before we move on to that, I read that we all can look forward to more outdoor seating, a cakey play area. Obviously, the parking's already started, you know, more electric vehicle parking stalls. I'm just really excited for Manoa Marketplace. Actually, I just went there this morning to drop off my kid, to hand her off, because she's off to like some water polo team trip. So I was just there.
That's great.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what I believe, and so I'd like to confirm, your inner compass of diverse thinking, a willingness to hear diverse voices, not being afraid of disagreement, healthy, respectful disagreement, because I wonder if it comes from your background, but also you've been, God, when we talk about nonlinear career paths, I would say, like, it's not only nonlinear, it's like a Charlie Brown, like, dust bubble thing. Like, it's all over the place.
I have had a tough time keeping jobs, yes. Is that what
you know, we need
at?
To talk about this.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned for you and your family.
Yeah. No, the nonlinear is a great way to characterize it, and I love it. And I encourage young people to not think too linearly about their careers. I started off in manufacturing as a foreman in an assembly plant at General Motors, building engines. Then I had the pleasure and the honor to work for Sony in both Japan and in Mexico. But then I got into healthcare. I got into A&B, and even within A&B, I've had very different roles, from CFO to running the plantation on Maui, the sugar plantation. And I wouldn't trade those experiences for anything. It has been really fabulous in terms of developing. Well, first of all, it's just been fun to learn about all these different industries. And second of all, it is really a way to broaden your perspective. And I highly recommend it. I discourage people from being too linear in their thinking about their career and feeling that first job out of college has to be the right one. It's actually more valuable, I think, if it's the wrong one, because you can learn so much about yourself and about what you like and don't like.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for sharing that. And also, to add to that, that your college major is not a one-way ticket nor a death sentence.
Not at all. I'm a big fan of liberal arts education. Mm-hmm. And I got a relatively useless degree, as a lot of liberal arts majors do. But, you know, I graduated with an economics degree, and 2 weeks later, I was working as a foreman in an assembly plant.
Uh-huh.
So what logic is there to that? Frankly,
right.
I should have had a mechanical engineering degree or an industrial engineering degree if I really wanted to go into that profession. But I didn't know I wanted to go into that profession until the opportunity presented itself. So
yeah.
You have to be able to pivot.
I love that. So you're beginning at GM. So I understand. So you're not from here. You grew up in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
You went to University of Michigan for that useless econ degree.
Yeah.
And some people, when they go to Harvard, they let you know within the second sentence. You're the other side, like Vance Rowley, who rarely ever talk about it. But you went to Harvard to get your MBA. And actually, that's where you and Melissa met, right? Your wife?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then afterwards, or somewhere along the way, you went to GM. But I think it's from your father was in automotive industry?
My dad was entire career at Ford Motor Company, the other big Detroit automaker. And so, you know, I'm not sure growing up if I knew there were other industries. It was kind of all about cars.
Are you into cars now?
Ish, not like
ish.
I used to be. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a car guy. I can't rattle off. Yeah, I do.
Ah,
but
okay.
I don't have a lot of time. I'm trying to remember.
So your dad was at Ford.
Yeah. So my dad was at Ford through his entire career. And,
wow.
Going into the auto industry just
seemed
like...
Which was very normal
for people to have a
whole career, yeah.
So I was thrilled to get a job at General Motors. I did apply at Ford, but I got a better offer from General Motors. And frankly, when I first started there, I thought I was going to follow that auto industry path. But I got a little disillusioned by GM in the time that I was there. I went off to business school, and then that broadened my horizons. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I went into manufacturing in the first place was that this was during a time of the demise of American manufacturing, and I wanted to kind of be involved in trying to turn that around. And so I was at GM for 2 years, then I got my MBA, but I had the opportunity to go work for Sony, and I thought, okay, the Japanese are doing it right. Let me go see how they're doing it. And I did work for Sony for a little over a year, but then I got married, and that changes priorities. My fiance, then wife, was in Chicago. So I left Sony and went to Chicago. So that ended really my formal manufacturing career, but I did stay in operations consulting and worked in that industry for a while. And great experience. And actually, I came back to it a little bit when I was running the plantation on Maui, because even though it was a very different product that we were making, it was essentially, the mill was essentially a heavy manufacturing.
I love that. You know, when you look back, it all makes sense, right? So when we talked story prior briefly, you shared with me, I thought it was so neat that you actually declined the first time AMB asked you to join their team.
Yeah, so 1992, my wife and I, Melissa and I, had one daughter, Natalie, and we were expecting our second. And we made the decision that we wanted to be close to family. And so I started a job search looking in the Detroit area and in Honolulu. And the first job offer I got in Hawaii was with Alexander and Baldwin. But just around the same time, the consulting firm that I was working for, Booz Allen Hamilton, sold a big
great global firm.
Yeah, yeah. It sold a big job to... They, by the way, they did not have an office here at that time. There was no Booz Allen office here. I was in the commercial practice, which is different than the sort of the government contracting,
the DOD and the tech consulting
that's here now. I was on the commercial side, which is actually now a separate business. But anyway, I had an offer, or I had an opportunity to come here and be a consultant at Queens Health Systems, and I was. You know, rather than taking a pay cut to come work for AMB, I took the role. And so I spent 1 year here as a consultant, and it was a great sort of risk-free way to come to Hawaii. If it hadn't worked out, if I hadn't liked it, we could have moved back to Chicago or other cities with Booz Allen. But of course, when you move your wife and your daughter and then your second daughter to Hawaii, where she grew up.
Exactly. Melissa's from here.
Yeah. It's you're never leaving.
Right.
I kind of knew
that. Her parents would have been like, okay, this is, you're good.
Yeah.
You're staying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I could have left, but I would have probably not had my family in tow.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I love that, you know, that when A&B first came a knock-in, that it wasn't the right time. It wasn't the opportunity. So tell us about, you know, after Queens, I believe you did some startups. You had a great career in that and, you know, including a cancer clinic in Hong Kong. And then you shared with me something that I think is really neat. And again, it's not just to share your story. I want people to be listening about how it applies to them, because I want people to realize that even if an organization comes to you and you respectfully decline because it's not the right time or the opportunity, you can always go back and you can call them. So tell me about that email that you sent to Alan Doan.
Yeah, so this is 2001. we're really debating whether it's time to throw in the towel and move back to the mainland, because I had done a couple startups. I was actually working for a startup on the mainland. And the thinking was that we would move back. But then I thought, you know what, let's do one last Hail Mary and just see if there's a career path for me in Hawaii. And I thought, when I thought about my priorities, I had done two startups, and obviously there's a lot of great things about startups. They're exciting, they're invigorating in so many ways, but they also have a level of risk with them. And when you've got two kids in private school and you want to make sure you can pay the tuition and pay the mortgage and everything else, you need a degree of stability. So I said, okay, you know what? I think maybe this is the time for A&B. And I emailed Alan Doan, asked him if he remembered me. He said he did. And they had an opportunity in corporate planning and development. And I took that job, and I guess the rest is history. That was 21 years ago.
I think that's incredible. I don't want to over-dramatize this, but Had you not sent that email.
Yeah, so much could have been different.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
And I just think that's so important for people. It's I've had moments like that where I look back and I'm like, if I did not make that phone call, if I did not send that text, if I did not send that email, or if I did not go back and say, hey, I thought we agreed to X, but something happened. Why, how, and then there was a simple misunderstanding. I just want to encourage everyone who's listening, especially our young people, that you are the captain of your ship. And if you had emailed Alan Doan and he said, I don't remember you, or I remember you, but it's not the right time. Okay, not great, but so what?
At least I tried.
Exactly.
Yeah. Couple things yeah. I'd love to follow up on with respect to that. First of all, I've had a lot of those serendipitous moments.
Yeah.
And the one that, of course, is most important is the fact that I ate at Bartley's Burgers that Saturday in October 1988 and met my wife. And if I had not, if I had not had that hamburger, who knows? Maybe, yeah. maybe that one. But the thing that was most important about that phone call or that email, that job opportunity, and being able to stay in Hawaii for me. It's great that, that my wife was able to spend her adult life, you know, near her parents, and they're still alive, and we're spending a lot of time with them, and it's wonderful. But I think the most special thing about being able to stay in Hawaii was raising my kids here, and
yeah.
and raising oh. them in this environment, this mm-hmm. cultural environment. When they moved to the mainland and they saw how different it is in terms of, you know, how different ethnic groups interact and relate, and some of the biases and the prejudices that they experience, either they personally or other ethnic groups experience. My kids are Hapa.
Mm-hmm.
It really dawned on me at that point what a gift we had given our kids by raising them here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've heard that from Melissa as well. We have one daughter. She's one kid. She's 12. And I mentioned she's off to water polo today. And again, this is no disrespect to, you know, the entire continental U.S., but our kids get pretty surprised at the sportsmanship difference.
Mm.
Not all the kids on the mainland, but some kids. And I think it's important for our kids to understand it's not right or wrong. It's just this is the world. And so you stay, you protect your aloha, but this is the world, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So you've been at A&B for 21 years. That's incredible. You've, as to your point, the very, very nonlinear corporate development planning, vice president, general manager of Hawaiian Commercial Sugar Company, CFO, president, COO, and then obviously CEO effective January 1st, 2016. So along these 21 years, have you ever had moments where you thought about leaving?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the thoughts about am I in the right place have, over the course of my career, have been related to two things. One is Hawaii the right place? Is there enough opportunity here?
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much off the table. And I was very comfortable that Hawaii was the right place when I landed at A&B. So from the day I started at A&B to today, I've not questioned whether Hawaii is the right place. I have questioned whether or not that business career was the right thing for me. I have a very strong desire.
And by the way, I'm really surprised to hear this. So I'm just staring at you because I'm surprised. Yeah.
Because I'm a business nerd. Yeah. Or whatever. But yeah, I look like someone
and
that would just want to
be. And by the way, nerd is a very great word. Nerds rule the world.
I know you pride yourself
yes,
in being a
nerd.
Yes,
I'm a nerd.
I know. I've heard that. So, but I really want to make a positive impact on the world, on the planet, on the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I questioned whether at one point, this is probably about 8 or 10 years ago, I questioned whether this job and this career path at A&B was the right way to do that. Whether I wanted my legacy to be, you know, selling sugar and condominiums, or whether I wanted to maybe go work in the nonprofit sector and do something
really,
quote unquote, more meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
So I had I have a friend who is sort of a business coach, a business advisor. And I was talking to him about this, and I was doing some soul searching, mm-hmm. and I asked him, you know, his thoughts. And he said to me, Chris, don't ever underestimate the platform that your job at A&B gives you to do good in the community. And it was really a paradigm shift for me, because what it helped me realize is there doesn't have to be a dichotomy between business and doing good. First of all, you know, so many of our nonprofits depend on local businesses.
Absolutely.
For, you know, financial support. Mm-hmm. But also businesses can themselves do good and need to do good. And also they do give you a platform to serve on nonprofit boards, to raise money and that sort of thing. And that was a turning point for me, because mm-hmm. it really helped me understand that I had the, you know, sort of the perfect combination of being able to have a successful career in the business community, but to use that career and that platform to do good in the community.
Well, and you certainly did, you know, so I know you've been pivotal in the capital campaign for Halequipa. You know, you're on the Catholic Charities Board. You are incoming chair or chair of Aloha United Way.
No one told me about that. I am on the board of United Way.
Wait, sorry, John Fink and Emily.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You're on the board of AUW. Yeah.
I think Rick Ching gets to hang on to that for a while. And by the way, Catholic Charities, I chair the advisory board. I'm not on the board itself. But yeah.
Because I have the board and then the advisory board.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, and I would past chair of TNC and that sort of thing. But you referenced Halequipa. And here's a story that I think is really important, is to understand how Halequipa's campus got built. Because, you know, you were kind and said that I, you know, played a key role in that. But that was probably, you know, the expression, it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
When I think back on that campaign and I think about all the things that had to fall into place to make that happen. First of all, you needed a visionary leader of the organization. Punky Platon Cross was that. And then you need the community to come together and fund this $12+ million campus. If Bill Mills hadn't encouraged me to talk to business leaders in West Oahu, if Jeff Stone hadn't rallied the business leaders, if Terry George hadn't pulled together all the foundations and said, hey, we've got to support this, if the Ching Foundation and Weinberg Foundation hadn't stepped forward, if Christine Camp hadn't donated the construction management services, I think you get my point. It was so many things had to come together, and it was such a great example of what makes Honolulu and the philanthropic and charitable community here special. It really was very gratifying. We dedicated the new facility, I think it was March 13th, 2020, just before the shutdown. And it's been a godsend for the organization. And every one of those individuals and dozens more made it possible. And if any one of them hadn't come through,
right,
I'm not sure it would exist.
Right. I really appreciate you outlining that, because oftentimes the greater public is not aware of those details, because another factor, another variable in Hawaii that's important is humility. And so people are not going around touting this, right? And so, and also, you know, when you, Halequipa and the board comes public and the Capital Campaign Committee comes public, again, it's not about giving credit. It's about, hey, look what we did together. So I really appreciate you doing that. Let's take a short break. And then when we come back, I would like to talk story about you serving as chair of the Climate Coalition for the Hawaii Executive Collaborative, because I think this is the ultimate expression of your dear friend's advice about you using your platform, leadership, and influence for incredible good. So let's take a short break and hear from our presenting sponsor, Servco Pacific. Today's episode is presented by Lexus Hawaii. Owning a Lexus goes beyond the joy of driving a luxury vehicle. It's a lifestyle. Experience amazing as a Lexus owner. Starting with the Lexus Takumi Master Craftsman, each specializes on a particular element of the production of your very own vehicle and has at least a quarter century of experience in their field. The Takumi's meticulous attention to detail, belief in excellence, and superior quality are unmatched. Lexus Hawaii owners are also invited to join Lexus Perks by Servco and enjoy unparalleled experiences at exclusive events, receive special offers, and more just for being a Lexus owner. To learn more and experience amazing, visit LexusHawaii.com. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're talking to Chris Benjamin, President and CEO of A&B. How was the break for you?
It was very relaxed.
Yeah. The massage was great, wasn't it? All right. So I promised that we would talk about the Climate Coalition, which I know that you are very, very committed to and passionate about, and you are officially the chair. Just to make sure that our audience is on the same page, the Hawaii Executive Collaborative, and please stop me if I get any of this wrong, is the evolution of the Hawaii Executive Conference, which was an annual convening of business, some nonprofits, some cultural leaders, but primarily business. You folks would get together every year. And it was really about, you know, knowledge sharing, forming relationships, strengthening relationships, and conversation. There were some transitions that happened, and Dwayne Carisu, who is head of founded IO, and of course, you know, Hawaii Business Magazine, ESPN, he, like he regularly does, takes things under his wing that he believes is important to Hawaii that may be struggling in different ways. And now it's called, in a larger scope, Hawaii Executive Collaborative. And I believe there's still a conference or a convention, but the Hawaii Executive Collaborative, again, I understand, is now more focused towards effectuating solutions under the change framework. So have I got most of that right?
You got most of that right. First of all, thank you for that background, mm-hmm. because I think that is so critical to why I'm even in this role. And it was really Dwayne's inspiration, the inspiration that I had from what Dwayne had done to reposition the Hawaii Executive Conference as the Hawaii Executive Collaborative, bringing in, making it not just so business-centric, but now it's government leaders, it is union leaders, it is education leaders, it is nonprofit leaders. And in one room, literally once a year, but figuratively throughout the year, you have so many leaders that are critical to making change, positive change in Hawaii. And yes, they did begin with the change framework, but at this most recent conference that we just had
last week,
HEC announced that it is focusing in four areas. One is climate, one is education, another one is housing for all. And the fourth one is what they're calling Rediscovering Hawaii's Soul, and it's around Native Hawaiian reconciliation and you know, strengthening the relationship there. And so at the last conference, which was last January, I was sitting there throughout the weekend listening to all these fabulous presentations about all those topics that I just rattled off, and thinking, where can I lean in? I want to lean in back to my earlier feeling about, you know, wanting to make a positive impact. I said, I've got to lean in somewhere. And it was the climate panel that really compelled me to say, I want to lean in this area. I reached out to Dwayne. I suggested what I would call a small collaboration. And he suggested that I become chair of the collaboration. So that's typical Dwayne, right?
So let's make a point there is, we encouraged everyone to be bold and make phone calls figuratively, but just know that when you make those phone calls, you might become in charge.
You might, but let's be honest, it was an honor for him to have him ask me. But there was one important thing. I'm actually not the chair, I'm a co-chair. Mm. And I want to make something clear that I reached out to Chip Fletcher at the university and asked him if he would co-chair it with me. And I felt that was important for a couple of reasons. First of all,
isn't he the self-proclaimed Dr. Doom?
He does, yes. He does have that that label. He is the guy who is doing the research around things like sea level rise and broader impacts of climate change, and publishes a lot of these reports because he's trying to get people to pay attention to this stuff, and he has been for decades. And but I also find him to be an incredible optimist too. And that's the part that a lot of people don't see. Chip has a really strong conviction that we can get this right, that we can make very positive changes. And those were some of the reasons that I wanted him to be my co-chair. But the other reason was, I think symbolically it's important. We're going to need unorthodox alliances to solve all of our problems. And that's one of the great things about the Hawaii Executive Collaborative, is Dwayne is bringing together people that wouldn't normally be working together. And
it's breaking those silos. I love it.
Yeah. I wanted that both practically and symbolically. I wanted that for the Climate Coalition. Mm-hmm. I want to show As Chip's characterization of it is his Chip's phrase, which I think is great, is the false dichotomy of the green community versus the business community. It doesn't need to be that.
There is no dichotomy.
There is no dichotomy because there is great
John Leong, right? He's a great expression of that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
John is on our board and mm-hmm. a very passionate leader on both the business and the nonprofit green side. But also, it's important to know that climate change in response to it actually is a great opportunity for Hawaii and for businesses in
Absolutely.
Hawaii.
I was just talking to my husband about this. I said, okay, so everyone who's smart is thinking about what's coming down the pike and how business, culture, nonprofit, we can all government, all wrap our heads around that because that's the future.
You know, it is not easy. It's daunting. And if a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, that's about what we've accomplished so far is that single step.
But you have to take that single step.
We're pulling together a good, diverse coalition of people. We've gotten about 25 organizations to sign our pledge.
Well, what is this pledge you're talking about?
So there are two elements to what we're trying to do. One is we're referring to as climate in, and that is getting organizations, and I'm careful not to say businesses, because it's not just businesses. It's schools, it's nonprofit organizations, it's government agencies. All four mayors have signed the pledge. And what we're trying to get them to do is look internally at their own carbon footprint and their own sustainability practices. But we're also focused on what we're referring to as climate out. And that is getting these same organizations and their leaders to help us improve the climate, the environment in Hawaii for effective advancement of climate initiatives. So that's legislative, that's capital, that's education and awareness. And so the pledge includes a commitment to engage on both climate in, what you can do within your own company, and climate out, how you can work with the community and government leaders to advance our agenda. And so it's available at the HEC website, hec.org,
mm-hmm.
and under the climate section. And we are just getting going, but we've got a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, and we had a very good reception to our presentation at last week's conference. And again, I huge shout out to the mayors who have all jumped in, and many, many business leaders, including some that would surprise you because they're either significant fossil fuel users or sellers, and they're all in on this.
Yeah.
We all recognize the urgency of this.
I love that. Well, I'm going to go check it out, and I'll be talking about it with my clients and other boards I sit on and other friends. And I had this weird thought come in when you're talking about climate in. Michael Jackson's song, Man in the Mirror, right?
Yeah.
So I love that you folks started with climate in, because before you ask anybody to do anything, you have to lead the way, right? You have to have integrity with that.
And it really is amazing how many things we do every day that do negatively impact the planet and the climate. And we don't need to get everybody to live off the grid and eat vegan. And it doesn't need to be so extreme, but you would be amazed as I read the research about what incremental changes can add up to if everybody does it. And so, look, I realize one of the things that is unfortunate, but maybe a benefit, is that there is no longer any denying climate change, right?
No.
If you go back 10, 15 years, the Chip Fletchers of the world were viewed as,
nut jobs?
Nut jobs. Or I was just going to say they were very much on the fringe, right? Now,
facts are facts.
You can't deny it.
Facts are facts.
And so while that's a horrible thing, it's also a good thing because everybody's coming to
the
table now.
So tell me a few of these incremental things that are in our everyday lives that we can all consider.
Well, it's everything from the packaging of the food we buy to what we eat. I was listening to a book called Speed and Scale, which is really a fascinating sort of menu of all the things that we can do. Justice Mike Wilson gave it to me last week, and I'm reading/listening to it. And the examples that are given in that book about the potential impact of cutting out even one day a week of red meat and what that does. There are things like that are relatively incremental steps that we can take. Now, there are bigger things we can do. We can stop flying and we can do things like that. But ultimately, that's not a practical solution. People mm-hmm. are going to still be flying. So what mm-hmm. we need to do is we need to identify, you know, renewable fuels. We need to do a lot of things. But there are a lot of incremental things that we can do in terms of replacing light bulbs with LEDs and
bottled
doing
water.
Things like that. Bottled water.
Right.
You notice I brought my water bottle because I didn't want to
contribute. I'm with you. The bottled water really stands for me. So when I have to buy a bottle of water, it kind of crushes my soul. And you were talking about industry and airlines specifically. Of the 25 companies that have signed so far, I mean, like literally today, as mm-hmm. of today and growing, you know, you have Hawaiian, you have Alaska, yep. you have HEI, which, has ASB, American Savings Bank, and HECO under it. You have Outrigger. So it is, to your point, industries and companies who you would think are fossil fuel forward, but we all have to make commitments that make sense to their industry and their company and where they are.
Right. And these are, by the way, the last thing I want to say on this is these are not just signatures that are going to sit on the shelf. Mm-hmm. These are CEOs. All the CEOs you just mentioned, mm-hmm. Scott Hsu, as well as Ann Teranishi mm-hmm. and Shelley Kimura, Peter Ingram at Hawaiian, and Jeff Wagner at Outrigger, they are really leaning in. I mean, mm-hmm. this is a big focus for them. And
so yeah, it's
we're
not
trying
a PR
to make
stunt.
Sure this
right.
is not a pledge that's going to sit on the shelf. This is a pledge to act.
Yeah.
I'm also very, again, a third time I'm saying it, but I'm very appreciative of the way the mayors and the state energy office and others have leaned in.
Yeah, and that was great. And I hope everybody takes a moment, doesn't have to be today, but maybe over the weekend, to go check out hec.org. And I love that you folks are continuing to focus. So what I heard was the four areas now, the four pillars are climate, education, housing. And the fourth one is about Hawaii's soul, but it's about embracing and respecting the Native Hawaiian people and culture. Do I have that right? Because I don't want to disrespect that.
You do, and I am leading the climate initiative, so I'm not directly involved in the Rediscovering Hawaii's Soul, but I will say that I think that what Dwayne and the organization are doing on that's a whole separate podcast, but it's really a very critical work that they're doing, and I applaud them for it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing. So let's go back and talk a little bit more about A and B. You know this, but I want to make sure we're, you know, share with the audience. I thought it was fascinating because I love history as well. So 1831, Dwight Baldwin and Charlotte Fowler Baldwin were sent by the American Board of Commissioners for Foreign Missions as medical missionaries to the Sandwich Islands, as the Hawaiian Islands were called at the time. William Alexander and Mary McKinney Alexander arrived the following year. In 1870, their sons, Samuel Thomas Alexander and Henry, I'm going to jumble this one, Perrin Baldwin formed Samuel T. Alexander and Company. Lots of things happened. And then in 1900, the company incorporated and was renamed Alexander and Baldwin. From there, we know about Maui, you know, sugar, coffee, mac nuts, railroad lines, pineapple, I found out. Of course, you folks began to acquire Matson in 1908, and you spun that off in 2011. Along the way, there was the land development and real estate, which also started in Maui, which is now you folks' not development, but commercial real estate, now is your primary focus going forward. You know, along the way, you've been a big part of that because you started your career in 2001. So you were there. Oh, I really love this. The year you guys spun off Matson, all that remained was lovingly called, lovingly is my word, by the way, but all that remained was lovingly called Remain Co.
Yeah, that's sort of an investment banker term for when you're working on a transaction and you're spinning something off, yeah. you refer to SpinCo, which was Matson, and uh-huh. Remain Co.
I love that. I love that. I'm going to start using that. Yeah. I think there's a lot of metaphors there. And then the year you became CEO was when A&B left sugar for good. So many changes. And then at the top of the talk, we talked about Manoa Marketplace as a microcosm, as a perfect example of you folks' strategic focus, which is to move your investments from the U.S. mainland into Hawaii and invest in the people and places and this community. But it's not just because it's the right thing to do. This is a business reason. This is a sound financial business reason, correct?
Yeah. So I got to tell you, as you were rattling all that stuff off, I'm actually getting sort of emotional thinking about that history and the fact that I have the job right now of stewarding this company that's been around for 152 years. It's a very big responsibility. I have a lot of aloha for A&B. I really do. And you acknowledged earlier that not everybody sees, it's a bit of a Rorschach test, you know, how you see one of these old big five companies.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, I ran into one of my former employees a couple weeks ago at Manoa Valley Theater. And she said to me as we were walking out, you know, A&B is not the same company I used to work for.
Mm.
And at first that sort of hit me as almost a criticism, but then I reflected on it and I completely understand where she's coming from. But here's what I believe. I believe that every company, especially the successful ones, evolve and they have to change with the times. I think back on a couple of the companies that I've worked for. Sony started off in rice cookers and then made the Trinitron and the Walkman. Good luck finding a Trinitron and or a Walkman at Best Buy anymore. You know, those are, they have moved on to different products as the world has changed. Even more dramatic example, General Motors has announced they're not going to make motors anymore.
Isn't that trippy?
They're going to go all electric.
Right.
So this notion that it's a different company if it's doing different things, I think is not the way I like to think about it. I like to think about the fact that Samuel and Henry were committed to the local community. They were committed to Hawaii. They believed in, you know, operating successful but diverse businesses. And we have evolved a lot over time. And we're still committed to Hawaii. We're still committed to giving back to the community. We're still committed to our employees. And I think that DNA is what makes A&B A&B. And I think it's still there. I think it's strong. And I think it's very positive.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's there's no playbook. But when I'm talking to Dave Moss at Hawaii Symphony Orchestra, Ed Schultz at Hawaiian Host Group, Corporate Matsumoto Island Holdings, and then Mark Fukunaga at Servco, and now you, you're all saying very similar things, which is some variation of you grow or you die, you evolve or you die, and you honor the legacy, but you have to go forward. And it's for the employees, it's for the community impact that your organization is responsible for, not just financial, but leadership, influence, time, right? Not just treasure. And so successful companies have to evolve. They just have to. So what have you learned from, or actually a better question is, during COVID, has that, the evolution of A&B and the focusing on commercial real estate, investing in Hawaii, did that change at all during COVID?
It didn't at all. What did happen during COVID is I think it gave us a great opportunity to demonstrate that we are partners for Hawaii. Because what we had to do is we had to work with virtually every tenant on rent relief and on safety measures and on curbside pickup and on, you know, all these things. Now, did we get every single one of them right? No, but very, very few tenants didn't survive the pandemic. You know, we always have some turnover in tenant base, but the vast majority of our tenants survived the pandemic because of the way we were able to demonstrate our commitment to them. And we certainly regret the ones that were not able to survive, but we were very committed to working with all of them. And I think it reinforced for me the whole premise of our business model, which is focus in one geography, focus in communities, and work with those communities. And I think that the pandemic gave us an opportunity to both demonstrate why that's our model and reinforce that it is the right model for us.
Yeah, you know, you had me thinking about something I said at the organization that I was at during COVID. And I remember saying to my CEO, I said, the way we behave right now going forward during this crisis is going to stay with this company for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. They're watching us. The employees are watching us and the customers are watching us and the community is watching us. So even when we were in the red, it was important to figure out how to engage, how to give. If you can't give money, you can give food, right? Mm-hmm. You can give time. Yep. You can get very creative. And so I really loved listening to you about that because you put your money where your mouth is, right? That was the test. Yep. And now they saw it. And then now we can, you know, go forward. So believe it or not, I mean, the time is just flying. So now It is the time where I ask you the question that I ask everybody at the end of the talk story, unfortunately, at the end, which is, ye of the wonderful grape-colored Aloha shirt, what would be your superpower and why?
Well, I don't know. You gave me some advanced warning on this, and I did think about it, and I don't know if this is a legit superpower, because I don't think there's ever been a Marvel movie about this, but I'm going to go with the power of connection, to connect people. And what I mean by that is, I think that in this day and age, the world is so divisive, and so many people do not bother to connect, because I think they're making assumptions about where other people are coming from, and they think that they know that it's fruitless to connect. And my experience is that if you can put some of those assumptions and prejudices aside and truly engage, we have a lot more in common than not. And I think that's what it's going to take. It's going to take, as I said before, unorthodox alliances, partnerships to get things done. And I would like to have the power to get people to sit down and set aside, whether it's political beliefs or assumptions about where someone is coming from, and just connect.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, Chris, for having this talk story with me and for being so open and honest and debating about what really matters for this community. And thank you for all that you've done and continue to do in this community.
Thank you. And thank you for what you're doing and for inviting me.
Have a beautiful day.
You too.
You've been listening to the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Surfco Pacific. All episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Stitcher, and of course at hawaiibusiness.com. If you enjoyed today's interview, go to your podcast platform of choice and hit the subscribe button, and also leave us a review. Positive reviews encourage others to tune in as well, and that raises the tide of meaningful conversation towards solutions in Hawaii. I'm your host, Anyang Nakata. Thank you for joining us today. Be safe, be well, and see you next time.